walk away from me, yeah.
And welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. Today, my guests are novelists Masha Hamilton, Ellen Sussman, and Amanda Iyer Ward. I'm going to introduce them all and then bring them all on. We're going to have sort of a panel on the air today, so it should be quite fun. And Masha Hamilton worked as a foreign correspondent overseas, first for the Associated Press in the Middle East and then as a Moscow correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. She also wrote a newspaper column from Moscow and reported for NBC Mutual Radio. Masha covered the Intifada, the peace process, and the partial Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon. Later, she reported on the coup and collapse of the Soviet Union and the growing independence in Soviet republics, as well as Kremlin politics. She reported from Afghanistan in the spring of 2004. She currently lives with her family in New York City, where she teaches for Gotham Writers Workshop. The Distance Between Us is her second novel. Her first, Staircase of 1,000 Steps, was a BookSense 76 pick and a Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writer selection. Ellen Sussman is the winner of a Writers at Work Fellowship, as well as both the Red Book and Paris Transcontinental Short Story Contest. On a Night Like This is her first novel. She lives in Northern California with her husband and two daughters. Amanda Iyer Ward is the author of the critically acclaimed and award-winning novel Sleep Toward Heaven. The New York Post named Ward one of five writers to watch in 2003. She grew up in Rye, New York, and lives in Calumet, Massachusetts, with her husband and her son. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. Sounds like it's working. I am so glad. Why don't each of you take a minute and talk about how the novels we're going to discuss today, Amanda's How to Be Lost, Ellen's On a Night Like This, and Masha's The Distance Between Us, how your novels came about, and at least to begin with, maybe say your name so we can get used to your voice as the show goes on. Do you want to start, Masha?
Sure. Masha Hamilton. Let's see, The Distance Between Us is about an American war journalist, American covering conflict in the Middle East. It is not autobiographical exactly, but it did have to go to the heart of something that I felt myself in covering conflict. The fact that you see horrifying things, and you need to distance yourself from that a little bit in order to cover that, a very common experience for journalists. And when you do that, you end up pushing your own emotions back into a corner repeatedly so that you can cover a story. I discovered in writing the first novel, my first novel, Staircase of 1,000 Steps, how much I had pushed my own emotions back when I was trying to write the emotions of my characters. And I kind of, in realizing that, wanted to write a story that might explore that, explore it through a woman journalist. I think it happens more to women often because it's even more important that they be tough in the field. So that's kind of where the story came from. In part, also, it came from Kevin Carter, a photographer who had a Pulitzer-winning photograph, and from my experiences with friends and colleagues in the field. And that's it. I'll pause here and let someone else take a turn.
All right, Ellen.
Yes, hi. I'm Ellen Sussman. On a Night Like This actually began as somebody else's story. My husband had got a phone call from an old high school friend who came to our house to visit. He hadn't seen him in years, and I'd never met the guy. And this guy told us a story which just caught my attention and stayed with me for a very long time. And his story was that he had, from high school on, he had gone kind of in a bad boy style from woman to woman, town to town, job to job. And somewhere along the line, he had gotten involved in his high school reunion and met a woman, contacted a woman from his high school whom he had not seen in a long time. And when he met this woman, he found out she was dying of AIDS, and he fell in love with her. And he spent the last year of her life with her, taking care of her and her four-year-old child. And when he told us about this, I was entranced. And I asked him after the woman died what happened to the daughter, and he said, "I don't know." And I was horrified. I didn't say anything at the time, and he left, and the story just kind of crawled under my skin, and I couldn't let go of it. And I realized that what bothered me so much was that it seemed like this was the moment that, or the opportunity for this guy's life to be transformed by love, and it wasn't. And I wanted to write the story with a different ending. Not that she was going to live, and in fact, in my case, the woman doesn't have AIDS, but cancer. But I wanted to write a story about falling in love at that period in time, and that love could possibly transform both characters. So I took his story and made it my own.
Interesting. Thank you. Amanda.
Well, my novel, How to Be Lost, is the story of the Winters family. It's a husband and a wife, Isabel and Joseph, who have three daughters. And the youngest daughter, Ellie, disappears when she's 5 years old. So the novel starts when Caroline, the oldest sister, now a cocktail waitress in New Orleans, is still obsessed with her missing sister. So I was dealing with many of the same issues, it sounds like, as Ellen and Masha, how families depend on each other, how love changes people, and how you can be lost even when you're standing in plain sight. So I was inspired by two real-life cases. One was the case of Eaton Patz, a young boy in New York who disappeared in the 70s, never came home, walked out the door at the age of 6 and never came home. And his parents waited decades for him in the same apartment and had to ask themselves later, recently, when do you stop searching for someone? And then, of course, the Elizabeth Smart case was something I was thinking a lot about. It seemed perhaps she might never have contacted her family, so that got me wondering what could happen to a person that person would stay lost forever and never come home.
Interesting. Well, let me reintroduce you to our listeners who have just tuned in. That was Amanda Iyer Ward, author of How to Be Lost. Before that, Ellen Sussman on A Night Like This, and Masha Hamilton, The Distance Between Us. You're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM. So along those same lines, it sounds like all of your novels came from something actual, something that happened. How do you know when you've got an idea that's going to stick? Because, you know, as writers, we have ideas come to us all the time, and most of them don't stick. How did you all know that these ideas for these novels had longevity, that you would be able to sit down at the desk every day or most every day and do whatever it took to complete the project? Do you want to start, Amanda?
Well, for me, I think it's a matter of blind faith. I've just come to trust my instinct now, but I just find that I'm obsessed with something strange. My first novel is about women on death row, and everyone in my life thought I was a little bit crazy for thinking about these women on death row, and I kept saying, "Aren't you fascinated with their lives?" And people said, "Not particularly." For me, it was a matter of faith that this was something I was fascinated in, and I believed other people would be as well if I could convey the stories well enough.
It sounds also that maybe you become a little obsessed. A writer becomes a little obsessed with
I absolutely
a topic.
Do. It becomes a personal obsession for me, and it's just a matter of working on it. So I don't even think anymore, is this an idea that will stick? I just grab on to whatever I think is strange and interesting in the world, and just trust that that's what I'm meant to write about.
Sure. How about you, Ellen?
Well, I seem to have the 50-page test. At around page 50 on a new novel, I'm either dying to write the next page in the next chapter and figure out what happens next and who these characters and what are and what's going on, or I've kind of lost interest. And if I've lost interest, I really do ditch the project. I mean, if I'm not feeling passionate about it, my readers definitely won't be. And there's a second part to that, which I'm sure has to do with what keeps me driving forward when it's working, which is, you know, we've all talked about sort of telling somebody else's story, but there's a point in which it becomes my story. And if it doesn't become my story, I'm never going to find that passion. So I think I'm talking about a woman and her relationship with her daughter, but suddenly everything that's going on in my life with my teenage daughters is pouring into the book, and everything about what I experienced in losing my mother is pouring into the book. And I'm not conscious of that, in that I don't think I'm writing autobiography in any way, but I'm suddenly exploring the issues that matter most to me, and that's when I know I've got to finish the thing.
Hmm. Interesting. Masha?
I think for me it's the characters. I hit upon a character and I feel finally drawn into her or him so significantly that I want them to live somehow. You know, I feel like I've got to stick with them. It's not about me. I don't necessarily want to be at the computer that day. I want to go out jogging, but it's really, I feel compelled to let them speak and let them breathe somehow. I get drawn into them. I think that's, for me, the thing that keeps me going through that sluggish middle part, shall we say,
yes,
all the way to the end.
Yes. How do the three of you deal with writing difficult stories where bad things are happening to people, or sad things, or things that you obviously have to go into the emotion of the event or the character to pull it off, because all of your books are emotional and I would imagine were somewhat difficult in parts to write. Masha, do you want to begin?
Yes, absolutely. There were parts of Distance that were hard to write, and parts that I I'd kind of closed myself off to in certain ways. And in fact, one of the responses that I got from a journalist friend of mine, a bit older than I, who had covered the Vietnam War as he was reading The Distance, was, you know, I'm loving it, but it's taking me somewhere that I don't normally go anymore. So I guess I can only say that, again, for me it was getting into the character and just feeling like, okay, we're going to go to the very essence of truth for this character, and we're just going to hang in there and get there. And of course, that means going into what I see as that little piece of truth. But I feel somehow that the words connect us, all of our words. I mean, you know, Ellen and Amanda's books for sure. And we are joined in some way, and we have a greater sense of what it means to be human. And yes. I guess that's how I get through writing that hard part.
Interesting. Ellen?
Well, I think I fool myself a little bit by reminding myself that this is fiction. And I say fool myself, you know, I just said that I'm tapping into all of this real stuff in my own life. But I'm writing about it as it happened to other characters. So there's a little bit of distance. It's not distance, because if we're not feeling it and if we're not letting ourselves go to those dark places, we're not going to get the real material on the page. But somehow or another, I can give myself permission, because there's some trick that my mind, you know, is willing to make, that I'm writing about characters. Just in the past year, I've started writing some creative nonfiction. I've been asked to contribute to some anthologies, and I wrote a my turn piece for Newsweek, and I had never written nonfiction before. And it's a very different thing, and it's much more terrifying to me, because I don't have that veil or something that I'm hiding behind.
Mm.
And I find that it's much harder for me to get to those dark places, because I can't pretend it's about somebody else. So I feel that fiction allows me to go anywhere, because all I have to do is say, it's fiction.
Yes. Yes. Amanda.
Well, I know exactly what Ellen's saying because I have had a terrible failures writing nonfiction because I'm able somehow to convince myself that this isn't me at all. And then when readers, you know, or even family members will say, this is seems like exactly what you think, I'll say, well, that, no, I don't know what that character's saying. It's very strange. I'm able to sort of divorce myself from the character and get into that voice or that world to be maybe more honest than I can be in my real life. And one thing, since my son has been born, it's been especially strange for me because I want his world to be a safe, happy place, and some of the things I'm writing about are not those places. And so I've started checking into motel rooms and hotel rooms to write, to sort of separate. I can be a happy suburban mother all day, and then when I go check in, I can go to these dark places. But when I come home, I'm a different person again. It's
That's
a little bit strange.
And is that for certain scenes, you know, you have to deal with, or is that in general?
I would say for most of my writing, I hope that I'll, and it's harder and harder as I get feedback from reviews and from readers to get back to that honest place where you're really not thinking about how people are going to read it or what they're going to think about you, but just the dark, honest places that we have to get to. So for all of my writing, I like to have it separate from my life.
Interesting, which brings up another point. But first, let me say that you're listening to Writers on Writing, and today I'm talking with Amanda Iyer Ward, author of How to Be Lost, Ellen Sussman, author of On a Night Like This, and Masha Hamilton, author of The Distance Between Us. That honesty, you know, beginning writers especially, I think, have trouble with just letting it rip and letting it come out, what needs to come out. Did any of you ever have that problem, or as you're saying, Amanda, when that starts happening, what do you do? What do you do when you think, well, maybe I'm taking too much of this one person I know and putting these characteristics into this character, and they're going to know it, and they're going to be upset, or, you know, whatever we start thinking in terms of that starts making us maybe a bit inhibited. What happens? What do? Do you want to carry on?
Excuse me.
No, go ahead.
I had one great piece of advice from my professor, Bill Kittredge. I was writing about a character that was very much like myself, and I wasn't being honest about the character. And he said, well, when that happens, you know, what you can do is lose a limb. And I said, what? And he said, well, you know, if it's a woman your age, but she only has one arm, then it's not you. it's a crazy thing to say. But sometimes I'll make something so different about the character that I'm able to convince myself it's not me and can therefore be honest about it.
That is interesting. I never heard that one.
The lose a limb advice, yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, advice given to mystery writers when they don't know what should happen next. Well, kill somebody off. I mean, you know, kill someone. Oh, that'll make things happen. So this is sort of the literary writer's version of how to change things. Ellen.
Well, I don't think I have very much consciousness of my reader when I'm writing in terms of what am I exposing or what is my reader going to think of me. I agree with Amanda that once, after On a Night Like This came out, and I started hearing from readers and reading reviews, it suddenly made that reality a little bit, you know, more, brought it close to home. But now that I'm working on something else, again, I've kind of forgotten about what anyone is going to think when they read this. It might be, you know, it's the way I protect myself. And I also don't worry about when I'm using someone else or feel like something is based on someone. I have found, I had written a novel that never got published, one of my training novels, early on, and was terrified that if it was published, my brother, who I adore, would never speak to me again. And finally, we had my agent got a nibble from an editor, and I thought I'd better show it to my brother, and I sent it to him. And he read it, and he thought it was the most wonderful portrayal of him he had ever read.
That's interesting.
He somehow missed the stuff that I was including that did not shed him in such a fond light. So I don't think people ever read things about themselves the way we think they are going to, and I think you'd kind of take a chance, put it out there, and see what happens.
Sure. Masha.
I definitely have to not think of the readers at all, and I usually can do that pretty well. My parents, in reading The Distance Between Us, my mom said, my father said, you know, this is a pretty good book. I think I'd like it even better if my daughter hadn't written it. And my mom, I joke with her, I'm often asked, you know, how much of this is autobiographical, and I tell my mom, I say, just the sex scene. So I really, you know, I don't think about it, and I can't, and I really don't, actually. But in terms of me becoming the character, in Caddy, there was a particular danger of that, since I was a journalist covering conflict and had certain ideas about that. I did end up throwing away 100 pages of this manuscript, 100 kind of polished pages, because I realized it was getting too close to me somehow. It wasn't enough Caddy's story. I wasn't getting to know Caddy and really trying to understand what her reaction would be. I was instead dealing with my issues, and it was really a liberating thing, actually, to throw those 100 pages away. I felt like, oh, my gosh, yes, this was the right thing to do. So that kind of helped keep me on track in that case.
Interesting. Did you also, Ellen had mentioned having a training novel. Did you, Masha or Amanda, did either of you have training novels that didn't get published?
Yes.
Yes, I also have one in a drawer.
In my drawer, I have a novel called Between a River and a Sea about a woman that drowns during Hurricane Bob off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. And it's really awful. Very dramatic, though.
Did you try to market?
I have one that takes place in Moscow. It's about a man who commits suicide right as communism is falling apart, and his widow is left to understand why and understand the kind of lies that life is based on. I don't know that it's so horrible, but anyway, it's in the drawer.
Now, did either of you, and I think Ellen, you sounds like you had marketed it a bit. Will the three of you talk about that? Because again, I'm thinking of writers I know who are not published yet, and think that if their first one, if nothing happens, that then they're nothing. They're losers. And how can they go on? And obviously, you three went on. Anyone?
Well, I've been teaching writing to adults for years. This is Ellen speaking. And one of the things that I have done over the years is talk to my students about my rejection letters and my acceptances. And, you know, every time I would have a story in a magazine, I would bring out a bottle of champagne in class to celebrate with everyone. And they knew about the novel that was shopped around and not published. I had another odd experience of a novel that was published in Germany but not in the United States before On a Night Like This was published. And when On a Night Like This was published, I certainly celebrated with my students. And one of the reasons why I was so open about it and was so thankful that I could finally have the novel in hand to celebrate with is that it is a long, hard journey, and I don't want everyone, my students especially, to think that it's you write a novel, you send it out, you find an agent, the agent finds a publisher, and it's, you know, it's published a year later. It rarely happens that way. There's often lots of roadblocks and speed bumps along the way.
Yeah. Masha.
Yeah, and that's true, and I'm sort of this crazy optimistic fool which just kind of believes in trusting in the process and hanging in there. I don't know. You know, people always say you shouldn't write unless you absolutely cannot not write, and I think that's true. And I just love so much reading, you know, your guys' works, and I love writing, and I love trying to get to that place in myself and trying to get it on the page and not being able to, and somehow or another, I mean, this is not to put away the marketing question, but somehow or another, that keeps me going through, yes, those inevitable rejections and those people who don't understand or say it didn't move them quite enough, but they liked it, or they can't imagine that their marketing people will ever want to buy a book about Palestinians or whatever the issue is. Somehow or another, it's really that wonderful thing of communicating past time and space with one another. Reading Amanda's first book about those women on death row and thinking, oh my God, they are incredible and they're so wonderful, and loving, you know, Karen and the other characters, and, or whatever, that just keeps me going as a writer and as a reader. I think that's it for me.
Hmm. And Amanda?
Well, you both put it so eloquently. I mean, it is the process at the end of the day when your book gets published and you think it's the, all you've been hoping for, the next day you've got to sit down alone in your pajamas and write. That's what it's about. And if you love that, I think you're ahead from the beginning. But I remember going for, I had two agents, I wrote novels, I published stories. It felt like, you know, it was many, many, many years of rejections. And I would go to readings and hear writers say, oh, and I found an agent, and the book came out, and it's all great. And I sat in the audience, and I made myself the promise that if I was ever up there behind a microphone, I would say, this is so hard.
Yeah.
Because no one ever said that to me, so I thought there must be something wrong with me. But I said to myself, I'm going to say that this is really, really, really hard. So I've just said it.
And,
but then it's wonderful.
Right. It's very hard, and it's all very possible.
Yeah.
It's that sort of like keeping your butt in the chair and giving it what you need. We're going to take a real short break. All of you out there, stay with us. We'll be right back with more Ellen Sussman, Masha Hamilton, and Amanda Ireward. Don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Be gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. One belt in a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I have been here since 5 o'clock with Amanda Ireward, author of How to Be Lost, published by McAdam Cage, Ellen Sussman, author of On a Night Like This, published by Warner Books, and Masha Hamilton, author of The Distance Between Us, published by Unbridled. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gosh, so many questions, and I'm going down my list trying to figure out what's the most important ones before 6 o'clock comes zooming in. I'm curious about how much all of you knew about your novels before you began writing them. Did you have your ending? Do you plot? Do you outline? Do you just go for it and make an appointment with your computer or your notebook and see what happens that day and just see where you're led? Amanda?
Well, I start out with a plan. After my first novel about the woman drowning off the coast of Martha's Vineyard, I realized that having some sort of plan or plot can actually be helpful. And so for Sleep Toward Heaven, I plotted the whole thing. And then I wrote each scene on an index card and then went out with a pile of index cards to a cabin that my in-laws own in the middle of Colorado, in the middle of nowhere, with my dog. And I wrote the novel as I had planned it. And I knew at times that I was pulling the characters around, and it wasn't really what they wanted to do, but I was going to make this plot work. And it took me then 2 years of revising. The novel was all in one point of view of one character, and over the course of a year, I added another character. And then it was a whole other year before I even dreamed up the third character, which changed everything about the plot. It was so helpful for me, though, for my first book, to have a plan, because it gave me something to do every morning and a direction to go in. So that for my second novel, I had a plan, but I was much more willing to listen to the characters. When the scene wasn't working, I knew it wasn't right, and though that was the plan and I didn't have any better ideas, I then would wait and listen, and the characters told me what they needed to do.
Would you say a little bit more about that, listening to the characters? Talk about what happens in that whole process.
Well, you know, I just went up to speak at my alma mater, Williams College, and it's a very academic institution, and I got up there and talked about how these characters and these ideas came to me in the middle of the night, and these students just stood up and they were saying, "So when these people come talk to you in the middle of the night," and I realized they thought I was crazy. And it's really not as much that I actually see a person coming to me as when I'm writing, for me at least, just the energy feels wrong. I just read an interview with George Saunders, whose work I very much admire, and he likened it to putting your hand over a stove and you feel the heat when the burner is on.
Sure.
Then you know this is the way it should be going. Mm-hmm. But for me then, when it just becomes awkward, when the words won't come, the scenes aren't working, that's when I know something needs to be reevaluated.
Okay. Ellen.
Well, as I said, with On a Night Like This, I did have some idea of story, as this friend of my husband's told his story of falling in love with a dying woman. So I knew that that's where I wanted to start, that this guy who was down and out meets this woman who has just found out that she's dying and that she has a 16-year-old daughter and no one else in the world. I did not know anything else about the novel. Oh, except for, and this is probably most important, I knew I wanted love to transform them. I wanted their lives to be turned around and inside out. So I had one vision that saved me, and by vision I don't mean anything like characters walking into my room and talking to me, and I get that question too, Amanda. But I had, I sort of imagined my characters in a scene in a cabin in the woods, and I knew that scene was going to happen towards the end of the novel, and I felt it in my bones. I had no idea how I was going to get from the beginning of the novel to that scene at the end of the novel. And in fact, there were lots of surprises to me along the way. I don't outline, I don't plan it out scene by scene. I often write a scene and suddenly find that something happens that I don't expect because, as Amanda was explaining, I trust my characters and try not to push them around to make them do things. But that also means that you make a lot of wrong decisions sometimes and have to redirect things to get to where you're going. But I think it saved me that I had that vision of that scene in the cabin towards the end, because I had somewhere I was heading to, even if I didn't know exactly what route to take to get there.
Sure. Interesting. Marcia?
Yeah, this outlining, plotting question is such a great one. I wish that I could do it. I sit down at the computer and I want to be interested, and so I really want the characters to tell me what to do. And in The Distance Between Us, I had an idea of what should happen at the end. What does happen is that Caddy, the woman journalist, her soul actually becomes really in danger, and then she pulls back really at the last minute. But what I wanted was something more gentle, and I had that in mind. I wanted Caddy to give up this story and move back to the States. It seemed right to me, and I kept trying to write the ending that way, and it just wasn't working. But I was insistent because it really felt like the message that I wanted to give, you know? And Caddy just, she just wouldn't do that. She just was not willing to do it. And finally, what I did at this point in struggling with the story, I mean, maybe this is a woman thing, I don't know. I went into where I usually got my hair trimmed, and I had them cut it off, more or less. They cut it to really short, and everyone in my family was kind of shocked. But it was somehow a way of me to say, okay, I'm going to let go of control. I'm going to let her do what she wants to do, even though I really wish she wouldn't. And that's what I did.
Interesting. So you got way into the character.
Yeah, I really, I find myself more eager to get to the computer and get to the story if it's kind of a discovery process for me each step of the way. And I do think, yes, I love what you said or quoted someone else saying, Amanda, about the hand over the stove. I do think, yes, once you get, start to feel that energy when you're lucky. I don't want to sound weird about this, but you do start to feel, oh, this is not what the character would do. This is wrong. This is me meddling around. And yes, this is what the character would do.
I wonder about that in terms of maybe it's a more intuitive type of writing, and without being all, you know, woohoo. But I think sometimes writers need to pay more attention to how what they're writing is making them feel. And I think that's what you're all saying.
Well, Amanda had said before, this is Ellen speaking, Amanda had said before about needing to trust herself when she writes, and I think there is an enormous amount of trust that we have to have when we sit down to write. And there, if our characters are pushing us to do one thing rather than the other, as Masha describes, we have to trust that. We fight it and it won't get us anywhere. So, yes, that's intuition. There's some sense of having to put ourselves into that moment and let it take us where it needs to go.
Yeah. It sounds like, I think I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I'm curious if you all always write in a linear fashion, or if you have any other process. Do you ever just write in scenes and deal with the scenes later, deal with giving them order later, or is it pretty much a linear thing writing a novel? Anyone? Ellen?
Yes, for me it is linear. I start at the beginning and move forward towards the end. Now, in the end, that might not be the order that the scenes will actually find themselves in the final draft of the book, but in my mind, that's what I set out to do. I actually do one thing that's kind of funny, is that if I get stuck in a scene, I will type into the document, describe the scene where this happens, and I move on to the next scene, because mm-hmm. I feel like if I get stuck and stay stuck, I'll lose my momentum. And I really do believe in writing almost every day and staying with it and not getting distracted and not kind of falling out of that fictional dream. So sometimes I have to go back and write in those scenes that I have skipped, but I do start from the beginning and move to the end, at least what I think is the beginning through to the end.
Sure. Amanda?
Well, I do this index card method, and it's been very helpful for me, where I will just sit there and write on an index card, scene at airport, or scene with Karen, or Karen meets Franny, etc. And then I lay out all the cards, and that morning I will write whichever card I feel like in whatever order. And that's the scene that, for whatever reason, is most alive to me, that I'm most excited to write. And then after writing that scene, I can put it in the done pile, so it somehow makes the day coherent. And I also then will put them all out again and say, oh, you know what, I don't even need that scene at the airport anymore, and now I can do this. And I find that there's scenes I'm resisting writing, and it's usually because they don't need to be there. That said, I write in a fairly choppy manner. I'm very bad at the webbing between scenes where I say, that was, you know, it was 3 months of quiet time. I just tend to go to the next scene. I'm very bad at that. But I tend, it again comes back to this energy, to knowing this is the scene that's alive in my mind, and I write them completely out of order.
Hmm.
But that's just the way it seems to work. I just wanted to add quickly to Masha's story about going to the hairdresser. That I went to the hairdresser when I was out in Montana and said, please cut off all my hair. And he did, and then said, did you get dumped? And then I said, yes. He said, that's always when people come in and ask for their hair cut off. Who knows? So I guess these large changes in life.
That is funny. What about you, Masha?
Well, I'm more like Ellen, I think. I write linear on the computer. What I do is, someone once told me that those lined yellow legal pads have a magical quality, and I bought it. So I use those lined pads, yellow in particular, to write and free write the backstory or scenes that I'm having trouble with, or what does she really mean here, or why is she saying this, or what does he want, and or just fool around when I get stuck in front of the computer. So that's where I dump out the out of order stuff and the odd stuff, and then stick with linear for actually typing it in.
Interesting. We have 15 minutes left with Masha Hamilton, author of The Distance Between Us, Ellen Sussman, author of On a Night Like This, and Amanda Iyer Ward, author of How to Be Lost. I am curious about playing against the stereotype. I'm thinking that this is one characteristic that differentiates literary novels from, say, mainstream novels, romance novels, what have you. For instance, in your novel, Amanda, your main character finds her sister, except it's not the sister she wanted. Will you talk about that? Did you know you were going that way?
No, in fact, and I don't know how, I'm interested in the distinction between literary fiction and other sorts of fiction, because I read everything. And I guess the kind of novel I always wanted was a page-turner that didn't have terribly written car chases in it. That's what I'm always looking for. So I don't know if I hope mine's considered literary, but on the other hand, I like to have a reason to turn the pages, but so I'm interested in what you all think of that distinction. But I thought that it was a different character in the book that was her sister, not to give too much away. And I wrote these scenes, and they just didn't work as this being her sister. So no, I had no idea. I knew she was looking, and I thought I had figured out the mystery myself. But in fact, the sister eluded even me until the third or fourth draft.
Interesting. Third or fourth draft. So how many drafts did you do of How to Be Lost?
About six drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellen actually is one of my first readers, so
really?
She read one of the early drafts, yes.
Interesting.
And loved the first that early draft.
That's why she's one of my first readers.
What about you, Ellen? Did you know, I mean, was she going to die when you first began this book, or... And was that purposeful?
I wasn't going to cure her cancer. I knew that. The surprise for me, I didn't want that to be an issue, and I certainly did not want to write a book that spent a lot of time on the medical part of the problem, on her treatment, on her pain and suffering. I really was much more interested in the relationships between her and her daughter, her and Luke, the guy she meets, and Luke and the daughter. The surprise for me was how much she changed in falling in love with Luke. And I didn't plan on that happening. I was delighted when it started to happen, when I found myself writing a scene and thought, oh my God, she never would have done this in the beginning of the book. And of course she would change. You know, I had set out knowing that Luke would change, but of course, Blair would change too, and that's one of the joys of writing, is when you suddenly find yourself learning something because you've taken yourself so truthfully into the story.
Interesting. Masha?
I think I've talked a little bit about how Caddy sort of defied my wishes at the end of this novel, and in the first novel, Staircase of a Thousand Steps, I knew that somebody was going to die, but I didn't know who. It turned out to be my favorite character, and I really didn't know until just before I wrote the scene. And it was kind of a shock to me. I was like, oh, my gosh. And I remember I was having some group read it, my writer's group, and I brought that section into them, and one of the men said, "You're only three-fourths of the way through, and your best character is dead. What are you going to do now?" And I thought, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next. And then after I was done with the draft, I remember thinking about it and saying, okay, now, why did this happen? And I realized, of course, she had to die, this character. She was obviously the one. Everything was pointing toward it. She was at the edge of what a woman could be in her society, and then she pushed past it. And, of course, she had to be the one. But I truly wasn't aware of it until just before writing the scene.
Now, how do you allow things to happen to characters you love? I think that's one of the hardest things as novelists that there is to, you know, allow a character that you love to die. Masha, what do you go through to do that?
Well, as I say, it was really upsetting to let Farida die. And the scene that I wrote right after that, when another character, Harif, finds her body, that's one of the few scenes that I didn't have to rewrite. I mean, it kind of came out. And in a way, I think that emotion was partly my own upon her death. But I also felt, when I decided that she died for a reason, I realized that her death was saying something about that society, that town, that village, those people, that was important to be said. I will say, though, that in pushing through the rejections that novel got before it got published, I felt, okay, I really want Farida to live before she has to die, so I'm going to stick through all these rejections and hang in there so that hopefully she can have that chance.
Interesting. What about you, Ellen?
I think that's exactly it, Masha. I knew that Blair had to live before I got toward to that ending. It felt to me that I was writing more about the joy of living in that last year of her life than I was about her dying. And that doesn't mean that I ran away from the scenes of her having to deal, especially with her daughter, about leaving her daughter and her daughter's losing her mom. But I guess there was enough passion in her experiences of living that I could allow myself the hard scenes.
Amanda.
One thing I'm finding that's so interesting, and so much of this conversation, I'm learning so much from both of you, but I've been asked recently at a lot of my readings whether I start with theme, and that's something that never really comes into play for me until the book is done, and I'm finding that both of you are saying a similar thing, that it's the character and what has to happen to the character, and it's later that you find, Masha, that it's because she was pushing the edges of what it meant to be a woman in that society, or Ellen, that she had to have the time to live beforehand. And I can't imagine how you'd start and say, I'm going to write a novel about life and the importance of living life to the fullest, you know, without saying, I'm going to write about this character and her experience. So it's so interesting that both of you seem to work the same way, that it's later that you realize this had to happen for various reasons because of things you wanted to say in the book. But when you're writing, you just know, oh, that's what had to happen. And I say had, it's not even like you have control over it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that aspect of fiction, that lack of control.
Because I try, often will write it the way I want it, and it just is badly written. And so I just think, okay, something's wrong.
Oh, dear, and we have a few minutes left with Ellen Sussman, Amanda Ward, and Masha Hamilton. I'd like to ask all of you for any words of wisdom or pearls that we can give the writers who are listening. Would you begin, Amanda?
Well, I think the most important thing that I wish someone had told me along the way is that if you are writing, you know, every day, every week, if you are finishing stories and finishing novels, then you are a writer. And it's a matter of time before you get published if you keep polishing your craft. I guess I kept wondering if I was going to be chosen or if I was meant to be a writer. And I've learned that it has a lot to do with perseverance and faith and just writing every day.
Thank you. Ellen.
Well, I definitely agree with that. And maybe because it's such a difficult profession, and I agree, Masha, it's not necessarily one that we choose, but one that we can't stop doing, I think we need each other, and that is something I have learned over the years. And I will just mention quickly the way that we all know each other is through a website called Readerville. And Readerville, amongst some other writing communities that I'm a part of, saves me. At least it saves me during the tough times. It's also a nice place to go and talk about the good times in writing and writing successes. But I think we need a support system that is not often easy to find in our society. And we have to find the ways to set that up. And sometimes it's in writing classes. Sometimes it's in writing groups that people set up on their own. Sometimes it's websites where writers gather and talk about the craft or the process, or how to sell books, all of those kinds of things. Writers' conferences. I think all of that helps us get by.
Mm. Thanks for mentioning Readerville, Ellen. I wanted to talk, if we had time, about promotion and how, and writing community, and we didn't get to it, so thanks for doing that. Masha.
Well, Ellen and Amanda, those were great pearls. I'm not sure I can add anything much to it, but let me try. I think the only thing I would say is write what moves you to the bottom of your soul. Write what stirs you and what makes you come to the computer or the typewriter or the yellow pad willingly without thinking about anybody else's judgment or opinion. Write what moves you and then just trust in the process.
Thank you. I thank all of you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Oh, thank you, Barbara.
Thank you,
this has
Barbara.
Been wonderful.
Yes, thank you. And let me just say, Barbara, I found your book very inspiring as well.
Oh, thank
Absolutely.
You. Very sweet. Thank you. Oh, the end of another show. And are my guests, Amanda Iyer Ward, author of How to Be Lost, published by McAdam Cage, Ellen Sussman, author of On a Night Like This, published by Warner Books, and Masha Hamilton, author of The Distance Between Us, published by Unbridled. As Ellen said, we all know each other through Readerville.com, and also, as Ellen said, community is so important, writing community. Having at least one writing buddy, a writer's group, or a writing community like Readerville.com can make all the difference sometimes between just sort of slugging along and feeling a little out of it, a little like a misfit, and suddenly, or maybe not so suddenly, discovering that, yeah, you're a writer and writers go through this and that, and you just need to keep going. So check out Readerville.com. It's just such a wonderful site. I can't say enough about it. What else can I tell you? If you want to know more about Writers on Writing, you can go to my website at penonfire.com. You can email me from there if you'd like to be on my weekly email list. Who's coming up next week is Simon & Schuster editor Brenda Copeland and Ted Botha, author of Mongo. Betsy Amster, my agent, literary agent, who was supposed to be on last week, and we had major technical difficulties, will be on, I think, in the third week in January. And what else can I say? I can say so much, but we're out of time. I want to leave you with a quote by Nancy Mayers, who said, "If the very thought of taking off all your clothes in the middle of the Washington Mall during a school holiday makes you blush, you haven't even begun to dream what it feels like to publish a book." Thank you for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Until next week.
Funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make make me smile.